Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 125 of Wheat All About It, or what I've entitled, The Folly Numbers Test Meets the Hyperbaric Chamber, about how using a U.S. Army resource intended for aerospace applications is making the test more consistent throughout the Northwest. Unless you're on the inside of the ongoing discussion about falling numbers, you've probably never heard the name Stephen Delwich. But depending on the outcome of a new elevation adjustment for the test, he could turn out to be a key player in the saga that has more layers than a Walla Walla sweet onion. Delwich is a scientist who works for the Agricultural Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Beltsville, Maryland, not far from the nation's capital. For more than 20 years, Delwich has been working on rapid and objective measurement techniques to evaluate cereals' quality. But when the call came to develop a more precise and consistent method to measure falling numbers, he stepped up to the challenge. Some history for those of you who may not be following the falling numbers saga as closely as others. The falling numbers test measures alpha amylase activity in grain. The test works by creating a slurry of flour and water, which is placed in a test tube, which is put in a bath of boiling water. The time it takes for the plunger to fall through the slurry mixture provides the falling numbers score in seconds. A lower number indicates the wheat has lost some of its functionality. 300 seconds has been established as an adequate score to avoid discounts. Although it was originally a tool for bakers who wanted to know exactly how much alpha amylase to add to their recipes, over the years it has morphed into a tender specification exporters use to ensure grain has not started to sprout, part of the germination process which can occur when rain falls on ripe grain before harvest. But there's a fly in the ointment in the form of late maturity alpha amylase called LMA. It's a phenomenon that occurs in the spring if, and this is a big if, a set of parameters comes together simultaneously. The variables include a susceptible variety and a cold snap at precisely the moment the wheat is vulnerable, which is about 20 to 25 days after pollen shedding or anthesis. If, and only if, this magic moment occurs, is LMA triggered in the developing crop. Although the process is not the same as sprout, it measures the same when it comes to the falling number test. This podcast is being released on May 14, 2019, which is right around the time farmers in the summer fallow regions of eastern Washington should be watching their fields and their thermometers for signs the LMA phenomenon might occur. It happens a little later in the Palouse region. There's nothing anyone can do, but forewarned is forearmed. Which brings me back to Stephen Delwich and the new tweak to the falling number test he and his team developed to eliminate some of the variability found when the test is conducted at different locations, even on different days. Until this month, when the new protocol went into effect, the only elevation correction for the falling numbers test occurred at 2,000 feet. But now, thanks to Delwich, tests will be conducted making the elevation correction using a barometer, a device which measures atmospheric pressure by elevation and weather, though as you'll hear ahead, weather plays a smaller role. Delwich came up with a new measurement technique by borrowing a hyperbaric chamber from the U.S. Army. For the record, a hyperbaric chamber is similar to a hyperbaric chamber, except the hyperbaric chamber measures pressure during high-altitude research. Not to mention the chamber is the size of a small room. Delwich was making a tour of the Northwest to visit with various stakeholders, including the Washington Grain Commission, to talk about the new elevation adjustment. He met with Washington Grain Commission Vice President Mary Palmer Sullivan for an hour on March 15, 2019. Then it was my turn. Delwich's research addresses the back end of a wheat sample as it undergoes the falling number test, but I wanted to ask him first about the front end, that is, the taking of the grain sample itself. Over the years, I've seen samples taken with various devices, most frequently a coffee can run through the grain stream as a truck dumps at the elevator. I asked Dulwich if that provides a good enough sample for falling numbers.
Well, I would say it depends. If the person operating the coffee can on the pole is very diligent in making swipes across the grain stream at regular intervals, as though that person was part of some mechanical machine, then in essence, that person is doing what is recommended by, as one of the techniques that would be accepted by the regulators, the grain regulators. But the problem, as I see it, is that it's too convenient for someone with a coffee can to make a swipe of the grain stream as the grain is being dumped from the truck and doing that maybe once or twice and calling it a day and saying that's representative of the truck. That's where there could be potential problems.
Does better sampling really make a difference?
Better sampling is going to make a difference in challenging years. In the years in which the grain from the field is uniform, then perhaps one would be lucky enough to get by with the one or two fillings of the coffee can on the truck to represent the truck. But in more challenging years, that's fraught with complications because of what's in the truck and the variability that's inherent with the truckload.
All right. So there's a new 18-page directive on falling numbers. When it talks about decreasing variation in the falling number test, what variation are we talking about? Are we talking about between the two samples in the falling number machine? Are we talking about the variation from being graded in Spokane and then graded again in Portland?
I think we're talking about both. We're talking about improvements that can be done within the laboratory to tighten up the way in which the steps that an operator uses to prepare the sample, to weigh the sample, to add the water, to shake the sample, to immerse it then in the falling number instrument. But we're also talking about variability that could occur from laboratory to laboratory depending on overall what elevations those laboratories are positioned at.
Okay. Before we get into the new testing methodology and the use of barometric pressure, tell me what barometric pressure is and why it affects the outcome of the falling number test.
Well, barometric pressure is, just as we know from our own home weather station monitoring that we see with these sets on the wall, where we can say that the barometric pressure today is 29 and something inches of mercury. That is a function of how high up we are from sea level. So the higher we go in the air, the pressure drops. And this is well known to people in the food industry, to people making, for instance, cakes at home, that the time involved in baking something will change depending on the elevation that you're at. In that same sense, what happens with the testing procedure known as falling number is that these falling number tubes are immersed in a boiling water bath. And the higher you go up in elevation, the lower that water boils. So as a rule of thumb, for every 1,000 feet that you gain in elevation, the boiling point of water drops by 1 degree Celsius. So say at 5,000 feet, rather than boiling at 100 degrees Celsius, water boils at 95. And it turns out that that truly makes a difference in the falling number.
But those home gauges that we have that list barometric pressure, they're telling us about the weather, not about the elevation. So doesn't weather play a role in barometric pressure?
Weather will play a role for sure in barometric pressure, but I would say even a larger role is just the fact that you're at an elevation that's, for instance, if you're at 5,000 feet, your base barometric pressure, if you want to call it that, is going to be quite a bit lower than sea level. And that difference between sea level and the pressure that you're at your elevation, that difference is much larger than day-to-day fluctuations under normal weather conditions.
We first got involved, the Washington Grain Commission got involved with falling numbers in 2011. That's when we had a bad falling numbers event. When did you get involved with looking at developing a new protocol using barometric pressure?
Oh, this must go back, I would say, 3 to 4 years ago. I had a meeting with federal grain inspection scientists in Kansas City, and we discussed ways to make the falling number procedure more precise. And a lot of this has to do with lab management practices I mentioned, but also one of the accepted factors that influences falling number is I'm, in a sense, using elevation and barometric pressure interchangeably, because I'm implying that they're very much very closely related to one another.
And so with this new method, you're going to look at elevation from 0 to 5,000 rather than going at this one breakoff, which was 2,000 feet. Explain that to me, would you?
The falling number procedure, let's back up and give a little history. The falling number procedure came out of work done in the Baltic countries, in Sweden, back in the very, very early 1960s, perhaps late 1950s. And somewhere between the early 60s and the mid-1980s must have been when the falling number procedure became popular around the world, and also at the same time, there was the realization that because the water would boil at lower temperatures at higher elevations, that this would affect falling number. So studies for making corrections began in the late 1980s and continued into the early 1990s, much earlier than when I became involved.
All right, all right. So how did you come up with the idea of using a hypobaric chamber? Is that right?
That's hypobaric, meaning
hypobaric
pressure conditions that are lower than ordinary barometric pressure conditions that you would encounter in sea level conditions.
Okay, and so you found this hypobaric chamber at a U.S. Army base, is that correct?
I did, in Natick, Massachusetts.
And so you went to Massachusetts with a lot of wheat samples, and you had a falling numbers machine, and you were just inside this
hypobaric.
hypobaric chamber, and you were doing all of these falling numbers tests?
We did. We drove from our laboratory in Beltsville, the 400 miles, to Natick, Massachusetts with our equipment and with our distilled deionized water and set up shop first as a preliminary study, and this was about 3 years ago, and then we followed it up with the full-blown study 9 months later.
Did the hypobaric chamber immediately suggest itself to you? You went, oh, yes, that's it?
I'd like to think that I could claim credit for the idea, but even the work of the late 1980s and early 1990s used a hypobaric chamber, which I believe was in operation at Colorado State University.
How many tests did you need to make to confirm your results? Was it dozens or hundreds?
So it was more in the dozen range, and what we wanted to do was to represent a diversity in wheat classes. We used three U.S. wheat classes, hard red winter, hard red spring, and soft white. The soft wheats, white wheats, in fact, came out of eastern Washington State.
I had a WSU scientist tell me she would have been more comfortable if the new method had been tested for a year before being implemented. Do we really know whether this new method will be to farmers' advantage or not?
To that, I would say that What we're trying to do is make a fairer and more objective system for grading and classification of wheat. And that is to say that in the old system, one of the weaknesses, the old correction, one of the weaknesses that I believe the Federal Grain Inspection Service acknowledged was the sharp cutoff at an elevation of 2,000 feet, whereby laboratories that were under 2,000 feet officially did not have to correct, and those at 2,000 and higher did have to correct. And it was known that analyses done near this 2,000 mark did have differences in those samples if you measured them at sea level, so that whereas the directive said that no correction was needed, the fact of the matter was that there was a difference in falling number reading for those laboratories near the 2,000 mark that didn't correct, and if those samples were to have been analyzed at sea level conditions.
Okay, let me put it another way. Let's say that a falling numbers test came in at 300 in 2018 under the old system. What does your data indicate the falling number would be for the same sample under the new method?
Well, I'm glad you've picked those numbers because I've made that calculation in advance. Let me repeat the condition to see if I have this right. You're asking, what would the falling number be for a sample that measures initially at 300 and we're specifying an elevation of 2,000 feet? Let's say 2,000 feet.
Okay.
Okay. In the old way, old system of the directive, one would consult the appendix in the back of the FGIS directive and find that with that correction at 2,000 feet in elevation, the new falling number would be 272 seconds. So it would go from 300 to 272. Now, with the new directive, it so happens that these changes are not terribly different from the old directive, but with the new one, with this set of circumstances, 300 falling number starting, 2,000 feet in elevation, where we're picking what the corresponding barometric pressure would be on a regular day at 2,000 feet, that would work out to a corrected falling number of 277. So in this circumstance, 5 seconds greater than the 272 value of the old directive.
Is this going to be to the advantage of the farmer, or is it just you're going to look at it in terms of it's going to be better for the industry because the numbers are going to match up?
It would be mostly the latter. It would be better for the industry because there's a better matching up of numbers across laboratories operating at different barometric pressures, operating at different elevations.
Okay. All right. So does a falling numbers test differ when you have a very low falling numbers grain, let's say 150 seconds, versus a grain that comes in at 295? Is it equally accurate?
By our testing, when we took our 12 samples to the hypobaric chamber in Massachusetts, we, with the help of the Federal Grain Inspection Service, in fact, these were their samples, we purposely picked a very large range in falling numbers. So we had samples, I believe, down in the low 200s and those above 400. And the beauty of the correction function, if you want to call it beautiful, is that we found that there wasn't this difference from a low falling number group to a high falling number group. The change was consistent with barometric pressure with elevation.
All right, very good. What new equipment will be required as part of this new falling number protocol?
Depending on the laboratory, it may be as little as including a handheld barometer. And these things sell for, and these are not the barometers that you see in the wall with a mercury column. These are barometers that have electronics in them that give you a digital readout of the pressure, whether it's displayed in inches of mercury, millimeters of mercury, millibar, whatever. These are handheld instruments that I think are on the market for about $300. Now, in addition to the barometric pressure function correction that the new FGIS directive will have, that directive will also include the requirement for samples to be shaken before immersion in the falling number bath by a shake-o-matic. If the laboratory already has the shake-o-matic, then the only addition in cost is the barometer. If the laboratory has been shaking by hand, then the laboratory is going to be on the hook for a much larger purchase, and that's the shake-o-matic.
So tell everybody what a shake-o-matic is.
A shake-o-matic is a mechanical device with arms, metal arms on it that allows the user to put a test tube. The test tube is what eventually goes into the falling number bath. So these test tubes with their caps on are inserted in the shake-o-matic. And the shake-o-matic is just a fancy mechanical device that vigorously and rapidly mixes the meal and the water in the test tube before those test tubes are inserted into the water bath of the falling number instrument. If the laboratory does not have a working personal computer, then that is another added expense, because the change with the new correction will require the operator to put values into an Excel spreadsheet to obtain the corrected falling number to sea level conditions. In the old days, with the old directive, the lab technician would consult a table in the back of the FGIS directive and do manual interpolation to line up the elevation of the laboratory and the raw falling number reading to obtain the falling number corrected to sea level.
So, Stephen, you were the one who came up with this. Well, I know that you are building upon the shoulder of giants, but with the whole barometric pressure protocol, is this going to stand the test of time, or do you think that there will be tweaks to it as you go along?
The tweaks that I see may be in perhaps a loosening of the frequency in which pressure readings are recorded during the day. At this point, I think pressure readings from the handheld barometer are to be written down on paper and eventually transcribed into the Excel spreadsheet for each run of the falling number instrument. But I could see that maybe a year or two down the road, with some comfort in running this new directive, that a loosening of the frequency of making the barometric pressure reading to perhaps maybe once an hour instead of every sample will be put in place. Now, to answer the question whether larger changes will be made, I'm suspicious that large changes would have to be implemented. So I'm hoping, and I'm somewhat comfortable, that the function that we've developed will stand the test of time at least for the next 10 or 20 years.
All right. So, of course, I'm in the Northwest. We've been dealing with the falling numbers issue now for more than a decade. Are there other parts of the country that are interested in these changes, or is this just a pretty much Northwest-driven thing?
I think you're in a hot spot here for two reasons. One is that with the type of wheat that you grow, the white wheat that you grow here in this part of the country, which is so desirable for overseas markets, that wheat tends to develop conditions of pre-harvest sprouting, or more recently, late maturity amylase, than the red wheats grown in other parts of the country. The other component is that some of the laboratories in the Pacific Northwest are at higher elevations than we are in the rest of the country. So it's the combination of the barometric pressure having a larger range in the Pacific Northwest and the fact that the wheat in some years with the whites has this predisposition for lower falling number.
All right. All right. Is there anything else here that you'd like to add, Stephen?
I'm hoping that the enactment of the new directive goes seamlessly.
As are we all.
As Delwich indicated, the new elevation calculation should advantage farmers. But I'll be glad when we're through the next bad falling number year. The Washington Grain Commission has been working on a number of fronts to influence the falling number debate, both with funding and advice. Implementation of the new elevation adjustment is a success story, but so was the creation of a quality position within the ARS based in Pullman. Learn more about the million-dollar position secured through Congress in Episode 73 entitled Falling Numbers, Rising Optimism. Go to the WGC website at wagrains.org, click on Summaries, and navigate back into time. If 2019 turns into a falling number year, it could pay to remember the new falling number test protocols require new equipment and expertise. Ensure that wherever your grain is graded, that it is done using the new protocols and that the new equipment required has been purchased and the personnel trained. According to a handbook I read, even something like failure to scrape a tube can result in a falling number misfire. In Washington, the USDA delegates grain grading to the state, one of the few in the nation to be trusted with that authority. As you heard, Delwich believes the new elevation equation will provide more consistency and hopefully lower discounts. But there is still much work to be done on falling numbers, and you can bet the Washington Grain Commission will continue to pursue the best outcome for farmers. I hope you enjoyed episode 125, or what I entitled, The Falling Numbers Test Meets the Hypobaric Chamber, about Stephen Delwich's work to ensure the test farmers love to hate is more accurate. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in its head. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.